PH on Wien. Herzlich willkommen beim Podcast der Pädagogischen Hochschule Wien. Muttersprachlicher Unterricht in Schweden und Österreich. Sie hören Rainer Havlik von der Kompetenzstelle für Mehrsprachigkeit, Migration und Menschenrechtsbildung an der Pädagogischen Hochschule Wien im Gespräch mit Tore Otterup von der Universität Gothenburg in Schweden. Das Gespräch ist in Englisch und wurde im März 2019 geführt.
Hello, my name is Rainer Havlik. I'm working as a professor at the University College of Teacher Education Vienna. We are here at the Competence Center for Migration, Multilingualism and Human Rights Education. And today we have as our guest Mr. Tore Otterup, former professor at the University of Gothenburg. And he is a well-known to our University College of Teacher Education since he did together with Professor Elisabeth Fuch several projects such as AMUSE, Lingua Inclusion and CANE. Today I'm very happy that we have Tore here. Please say hello.
Hello.
And we're going to discuss a little bit about mother tongue tuition in Sweden and in Austria. What are the differences? What are the different approaches? And how did it act in the last years? So Tore, if I start now, mother tongue instruction, since when do you have it in Sweden?
Actually, we have it since 1977. And it was started because there was all the political parties at that time agreed that it was important that migrants should be able to choose if they want to stay with their language and develop their language and keep the knowledge of their language and also, of course, the culture, or if they would like to leave it and learn about the Swedish culture and the Swedish language only. So it was decided that it should, every municipality, every school should offer mother tongue instruction to the pupils. It was not going to be obligatory. Mm. You could say no if you didn't want to, but it should be offered. And it started out like that, very, very open and very, and I think about 65-70% of the pupils at that time.
That's quite a difference to Austria, actually, because if you compare it to Austria in the beginning of the 70s and the tradition of the guest workers, actually it was done by the municipality. They had to do it. It was kind of approach that looking at these bilingual students, it was in kind of tradition of nowadays, hopefully old-fashioned Ausländerpädagogik, to really look at these guest workers and say, okay, you will be taught in your mother tongue because I'm guessing you're going back.
All right. Yeah, no, that was not the approach in Sweden. Yeah. No.
How many pupils do you have? When does it start in mother tongue tuition? How many pupils in a classroom that you start?
Well, in the beginning there could be only one if there was only one, but nowadays of course the rules are more strict. So there must be at least five pupils who want the same.
Only five pupils in Austria. It is really normal that we have about 12 members, and if there are 12 members of the same language, they start thinking about doing this. So this is quite a difference actually here.
How is mother tongue tuition organized in Sweden?
Okay, yes. Yeah, in Sweden. Again, it's different. But in the bigger cities, for example, in Gothenburg, mother tongue teachers are employed by a language center. Mm-hmm. So all the different language teachers are employed there. Mm-hmm. And then the schools, you know, buy hours from working hours from.
So schools are very autonomous in Sweden, as I understand.
Oh yes, they are. Yes.
Because this is something which is coming up in Austria now. Because until now they're not really autonomous. It's always the boards of education in different counties who decide upon how many pupils we have, how many teachers are divided into the space of the cities.
Yes. But in Sweden, you know, it's the municipalities who are responsible for schools, and of course they get the money from the state, and there is a school act, education act, and a school law, so they must follow. But apart from that, if they do that, they are very free to do it the way they want. But as I said, they are employed at these language centers, but if there are, there are also schools where there are, for example, very many Arabic-speaking pupils, they can also employ an Arabic-speaking mother tongue teacher there at the school.
So you have to explain why you said now Arabic. What is about Arabic and Sweden?
It's the biggest.
It's the biggest language.
It's the biggest, absolutely the biggest language, mother tongue, the mother tongue in Sweden, apart from Swedish, of course.
Yes. And what are the other languages, like the other big micro languages?
I think the second biggest is Somali, actually. Hmm. And then third, I think Bosnian, Serbian, Croatian.
Yeah. Because in Austria it's Bosnian, Croatian, Serbian, Turkish, and now, of course, since summer 2015, it's Arabic languages. And I think in the rest, it's probably quite the same. Chechen we have, and then we have Albanian as well.
We have Albanian. Among the 10 biggest, and Persian, Kurdish, English also.
English as well.
But not necessarily from England then.
And also from summer 2015, as I understand, especially also in Gothenburg, you've got Somali.
Somali, yes, but we've had Somali speaking since beginning of the 1990s, I think.
Interesting. This is really
when the civil war started there. Yeah.
Who gets the permission for mother tongue tuition in Sweden?
It must be a language spoken by one or both of the parents, and it must be an active language which is being used at home. If not, it should never be a second language. But they have also started actually with these official minority languages when we're teaching as in Sami, for example, as a second language, to try to revitalize these languages, because they tend to get fewer and fewer speakers of these minority languages. Yeah.
What kind of qualifications do mother tongue teachers have in Sweden? Are they all teachers? Were they all teachers before? Or where do you see the variety?
Also varies, of course, but I think they try to, since they don't have any official mother tongue academic teaching for mother tongue teachers in Sweden nowadays. It used to be in the 1980s, for example, but not anymore. What they do is they try to find people who have academic education in their backgrounds. And some absolutely are teachers from their home countries. But, for example, these language centers, like I told you, they try also to qualify these teachers. So they send them to different courses so that they should for example, to pedagogy or so they try to get them their qualification.
But we're happy to do the course of study for mother tongue teachers, which is nationwide, and it's now starting for the fifth time here in Austria, and for the fourth time it's going to be the University College of Teacher Education in Vienna who's going to do it. And the one who founded it is actually together with Elisabeth Fuch, is Elfie Fleck, with whom you wrote an article about mother tongue instruction in Austria and Sweden. And she writes about the Austrian situation regarding the qualifications of mother tongue teachers in Austria. I quote, "Furthermore, a considerable number of teachers lacks adequate pedagogical skills as they studied other, though often related subjects, such as translation, psychology, social work, and their countries of origin." So this is really something which is very true. It is very important that they get their pedagogical skills. They have to do a lot of trainings, even at the Sprachförderzentrum in Wien, which is kind of a language center organized by the Vienna Board of Education, or they do the course of study here at the University College of Teacher Education in Vienna. And it's really, really important for them to get also these course of study, which is 30 EC, and that's quite a lot, because they need this to get better contracts. Yeah. Our idea is to have that they will have better contracts working in their working field in schools. So this is something which is quite which can be compared. And as far as I know, from the project Kindimi, in which we're involved, University College of Teacher Education, I know that Uppsala University is on doing this kind of course of study for mother tongue teachers as well, that they are really getting into it again. And so luckily to Kindimi, we've got corporations also, people coming. We had professors from Uppsala. Marita Gareis was here as a professor from Uppsala to teach us in our course of study,
okay,
and to discuss a little bit about how the situation was in Sweden. As far as I know, Tore, you wrote your PhD on identity of multilingual children in their lives and their cities. This is something, a subject which is highly discussed nowadays, especially like if you compared with the new book by Fukuyama, which is called The Identity as well. And of course, there is this big concept of hybrid identity by Mboba. And what I understood, you were quite close to Mboba. You talked about, you wrote in your PhD about these multiple approaches.
I call them syncretic identities because they, what I found is that they really pick and choose, because depending on who they are with or who they are speaking to and what situation they are in, they can change very differently, very rapidly, and adjust to that situation. So, and they also can vary between the languages they speak very easily and find it. I think nowadays we call it translanguaging. We go between languages and use the whole, your whole linguistic repertoire, and for whatever use you have, really, what function you want to express, and to most of the, of these my informants, it was not a problem at all. They found it very, very natural, and they did it very, very easily. And they didn't see any problems in that that change between identities like that. On the contrary, I would say that they find they can see possibilities in that. They can use it for yeah. They had very views, very good and views on their futures because they thought they could. They can do this in this language, or they could do that in another language, and they don't see it as a problem at all.
Yeah, I think it differs in age. I think if you're young children, if you're a young child, like in kindergarten or in primary school, you are not the one who can stand up for your rights.
No.
Yeah, and they need the protection of the kindergarten teachers or the primary school teachers to tell them that it's okay, that it's normal that they are bilingual or multilingual.
Yes.
And that so they develop a positive self-concept going on in school as well, or going on in life, which is more most important, because I think a lot of teachers also tend to see them like kind of institutional children. They are always pupils, but they are more than just pupils. They are children, of course. They are alive children who need to deal with a multiple approach. If they come home, they speak with Papa in Turkish, with the mother in Kurdish, and then with the brother in German, which is quite a normal thing and for them. But yeah, of course, it can frighten as well, because you are always someone else as well if you speak a different language in a different situation.
Yeah, I should point out that these informants I talked about were they were leaving upper secondary school, so
yeah,
they were like 17, 18 years old when I interviewed them there.
And that is great. I mean, if they're 17, 18 years old and they're proud about having their second language, then school did something right with them.
Yes.
Because it's not normal.
But then I also want to say that when they are younger, of course, they want to be like every other pupil at school. And then they don't want to show that they have speak another language, maybe, or if they have a different culture. So that's why it's so important that school should be very supportive and really promote multilingualism and show that it's appreciated.
Absolutely.
And it's something that could be used in school, and it's valuable. So the attitude from the school is very, very important.
Very important, as you say, because of course when they come in puberty, they want to blend in. They don't want to be different.
Sure, sure.
They don't want to be the others.
No.
So it's very, very that approach if you really do these othering concepts in primary education or in kindergarten to tell them you are different, you are the other.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a big fear I sense in school education and in kindergarten education if you have this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see chances actually for mother tongue teachers in the transition between kindergarten and school, or are you rather skeptic about this? What is your
opinion? No, I think, for example, if because the kindergartners or preschools, say you also use these mother tongue teachers employed at the language centers, they, of course, they can follow them all the way up into school and to primary school and also secondary school.
Yeah.
So that's a good, that can work like a sort of promoter or helper, really, to help them to understand how things work. And
yes, especially to understand the social codes of school and to understand how school works, because we're talking about, if you're talking about urban areas, we're talking about kids having a low social economical and low social cultural status, which is of course makes them not understand school, but not because they're multilingual, but because they are coming from a different part of society. And mm-hmm. that's the main thing to stress out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else? Anything you want to add?
Parents' involvement, maybe?
Yes, parents' involvement.
Which I think is very, very, very important too. And it's always, I think teachers in Sweden find it difficult to get the migrant parents involved in school and schoolwork, because there is a tradition of for many of them to leave these things to school and not interfere in what the school does. I think it's very important to have a good contact between parents and the school and the teachers. And what they have tend to do is they tell the teachers, or the school tells the pupil, the parents that the obligations, what they must do, what they must see to that the pupils do, and the obligations for the parents too. And that it can be important in a way of explaining how the Swedish or school works in this in these countries. But it's also important to involve them in other areas and to show that school is interested in what they bring to Sweden, for example, and what they can bring into school. And there have been some projects in Sweden where they, for example, use homework, mm-hmm. and they give tasks, and for example, which means that the pupils must go home and ask their parents for different things, and then they take it back into school, and then they compare different ways of seeing things. And it can be very many different things, but it's one way of showing that we think what you bring to us is important too, and we want to use that for our education here. And it's also very good, I think, to compare very different views on things and solving problems in very many different ways.
Definitely.
And that has been very successful, I know, and it's very appreciated also by parents.
I think school and kindergartens needs to open up. They need to tear down the walls and go to the agora, to the open space where they should meet each other and to see that they are pedagogical actors and interfering with the parents as well, but on a level not telling you, I will tell you what you have to do.
Exactly.
Because this is not an approach which is really going to be really friendly, but really from eye to eye on the same level. And that, I think, is a good approach to see. To welcome them and to make them part of our society.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Tore.
Thank you very much.
PH on Wien. Herzlich willkommen beim Podcast der Pädagogischen Hochschule Wien.